All right. Welcome, everybody. I'm Cooper. I'm here with the March Hair Collective. I guess I'll just start off and tell you a bit about us. March Hair Collective is we're a communications group. We work on communications for protests and big actions. Specifically, we want to build better software and hardware to enhance our ability to communicate in the streets during times of crisis and in other like high-impact situations like that. So we're all volunteers. We haven't been raising any money. We've all just been doing it out of pocket. We want to provide more tools that can be used by radicals around the world, regardless of language or location or funds. So our goals are to make cheap, easy, and effective tools. First thing I'm going to talk about is just a bit of a history of radical communication. Obviously, communication is important. Whether you're, social movements need to be able to communicate. We need to be able to talk to each other. Next slide. So, we need to be able to talk to each other, we need to be able to get information from each other, we need to be able to make decisions as a group, and we need to be informed as to what other people, if you're at a protest, you need to be informed or if you're doing direct action, you need to be informed what the other people in your affinity group are doing. If you're at a protest, you need to be informed what other people in the street are doing. And just if you're building a movement, you need to be informed as to what other people in the movement are doing. So for people to make good decisions, they need good data and good info, and they need good ways of sharing that info. And authoritarian governments and corporations know that communication is important to us because it's important to them, too. And they have a vested interest in controlling that communication, as seen by the FCC. Telephone companies and things, it's very important that the lines of communication are controlled. So, as radicals, we've had to come up with our own methods of communication because the methods of the state can't always be trusted. So, some of the early methods of communication are broadsheets, just giant newspapers that communiques or announcements, things like that, distributed during revolutions. They were useful in the American Revolution and in the French Revolution. That set of broadsheets is you have to have a printing press. And most people don't have a printing press. So a big technological advance was pirate radio. With pirate radio, suddenly with a lot less resources than you needed for a printing press, you can communicate to a lot more people. Pirate radio was really effectively used in Italian protests in got a page down. In 77, and Radio Ubu was used in Paris in May of 68. The Vietnam War had a pirate radio station, which was that movie Good Morning Vietnam details the story of that. It's funny that I think pirate radio seems to get the most romanticized attention from Hollywood out of all of these. There's like three movies about pirate radios. I don't know, people are really into it. The problem with pirate radio is still it's a one-to-many communication. Only one person can be at the mic. Really, you still have to have a lot of resources to get a pirate radio station set up. Indie media was a big shift in that. Indie media was you all know what indie media is, I assume. Does anybody not know what indie media is? Okay. So, and indie media was a big shift in that. Indie media allows everybody to publish their news, and you can have many-to-many communication that's happening instantly. And as long as indie media is running the servers, you don't have to know anything about the technologies involved behind that, and you don't have to know you don't have to have the resources and equipment to do it. So that was a real big step forward in our communications as activists. And then around the same time, TextMob came about, which was TextMob was the first system that allowed activists to communicate via SMS message in real time. And have any of you ever used TextMob? Besides you? You? Okay. So TextMob was a service that allowed people to sign up to receive text messages from a third party, usually somebody running an action. It was useful for like flash mobs or saying there's cops on 9th and Market, so we'll head toward 8th, and things like that. The downside of TextMob was that it was actually really hard to use. In the days before smartphones, sending text messages, before phones with keyboards, sending text messages is really slow. And also, to sign up for TextMob, you had to send a text message to an email address, which nobody could figure out ever back in the days. So we tried to use it at some protests and maybe got 5 people on the TextMob network. It was really ineffective. So to solve that, we came up with Tapatio. Tapatio was first developed and deployed for the St. Paul, what was that, IMC? No, not IMC, that's in the media center. RNC, right. Wait, how did I get down to the last page? Sorry, guys. I don't actually know how to use a computer. I just play a hacker on TV. So we developed Tapatio in preparation for the RNC in St. Paul. And the idea of Tapatio was to make something like TextMob, but easier for people to use, easier for people to access, and more accountable. So Tapatio was a success, despite the fact that the comms office got raided on the first major day of action. We were able to bring the system back up and continue doing comms reporting. Let's see. Yeah, so the so Tapatio used, the advantage of Tapatio over TextMob was that Tapatio used Twitter as its backend, which made, instead of signing up by sending a text message to an email, you can just now send a text message to a phone number. And this made things a lot easier for people to sign up and work with. The downsides were that, first of all, Twitter, that was when Twitter was still very new and nobody had heard of it yet. So it was still a bit confusing for people trying to figure out how to sign up for this Twitter thing and what the fuck it was. Another downside was that Twitter was a corporate service. And you know, you're, at that point, you're still relying on the kindness of a corporation towards protesters, which is not always effective. The other problems were that we had trouble verifying data that was coming in off the streets, and we had trouble getting people to give us reports off the streets. Very few people actually texted in reports, and we also had just trouble. We didn't want to put out false information on the system, so we had to verify each report that comes in, and it was hard doing that sometimes because maybe one person says something is over here, and you can't get anybody else over there to make sure that's true, so you don't want to send it out. But you also don't want to not send out any information because then there's no point to the system. All in all, it was a success, and we felt good about it, and we used it again in Pittsburgh at the G20. First thing we did was decentralize the platform that time so that comms office could not get raided. But the problem in Pittsburgh, which if any of you are familiar with what happened there, was massive police repression. Police just shut down the city and were very, you know, very violent as they are. And and the other thing that happened then was Twitter turned on us, which was inevitable, and Twitter started shutting down accounts. So at this point, we realized we can't really effectively use Twitter as a backend for communications because they're not reliable. They're not any more reliable than AT&T or the fucking cops. So okay. Oh, so I guess I'm going to... You want to go to the next one? I guess I'm going to explain a little bit about how Tapatio works to give it to... so I'm going to give that background. So the main audience of Tapatio is a team of operators who are collecting, sharing, verifying, and then dispatching information to interested people. The interested people are people in the streets who can receive text messages and reports based on their topics of interest and possibly their location. So like if you're a medic and you only want to sign up to receive medical info relevant to the protest, like protests are down at 8th and Brannan, we need somebody out here to give medical treatment, you can only get those. So you're not getting the whole stream of text messages and just completely jamming your own signal with too much information. So that was one of the other real strengths of Tapatio. And that messages can be timely. You can have an event and have news of that event go out a minute later. So if a cop beats up your friend, everybody can know about that right then, even if they didn't see it. Go ahead and do the next one. Tapatio was built on top of the open source CMS called Drupal. We chose Drupal because it was free and open source, and it saved us a lot of programming time. We could use a lot of the features that were already there. And the side benefit is that Drupal is maintained by a lot of people. So yeah, I mean, it really, deploying it on Drupal was a benefit for us, and it helped us release the software quicker. Next slide? No. Oh, shit. Good. So, yeah, like I said, operators collect information, dispatch information, and verify it. And then users get that information and can make more effective decisions in the streets. That's the idea. The strengths of Tapatio were that it was cheap. Well, I mean, it was cheap for us, right? All you had to have was one computer to set it up on. It was easy for people to use. People can sign up for Twitter. The information was guaranteed to be more accurate than if we had just let anybody send information out to the stream. Decentralized. And it can scale. It could scale to a rather large protest really easily. The weaknesses of Tapatio are that it relies on Twitter. That's the main weakness. The other weakness is security concerns. If the comm center was raided, it's possible that, I mean, and so there's two security concerns here. One is that since the stream is open to all, it's also open to the police. So you can't say anything that you don't want the police to know. The other security concern is, for example, when they raided our comm center in the original protest, the concern there was for the security of all the operators in that building, but also all of the people that had signed up for the service and, you know, having lists of their phone numbers, having lists of interested parties, basically, which is not something we want to hand to the cops and say, here you go, here's a list of technologically capable, really interested in activism type of people. Enjoy. Another weakness is text messages are just short. They're limited to 255 characters, and you just, as we all know from, if any of you have read Twitter, it's fucking boring. You can't say shit. I mean, you have to be very concise, and that makes things hard sometimes. Another weakness was sometimes people were signed up for too many categories of information or the right categories of information, you would get too much information. Even with the hyper-specialized text message streams, you would still be overwhelmed with all the things that were going on. Most people, I mean, people can't process more than a certain number of things. Okay, now, and the lack of on-the-fly customization?
Yeah, say that you were in one part of downtown and you were interested in police in the Market Street area, but then you moved out to the Mission and you were already subscribed to the Market Street area. It was difficult for people to then subscribe to police action information in a different part of town.
Can I introduce you?
I'm Dennis.
Are you going to introduce yourself?
I'm a member of Padlock and the March Hire Communications Club.
So So that's what we learned from Tapatio. And we worked with Tapatio a lot. And since Tapatio happened, there have been a number of very similar platforms that people have worked on and released. One of which is Yushahidi. Yushahidi was developed in Kenya by a team, I guess they're just the Yushahidi Foundation. They developed it to track and report election violence that was going on in Kenya at the time. So Yushahidi was basically, it was a lot like Tapatio, except that it also included a map of where things were going on, where they were happening, how often they were happening. The other cool thing about Yushahidi was that they had streamlined the process of being able to send in reports by cell phone. This works really well in Africa because having any sort of infrastructure in Africa is spotty at best and non-existent most of the time. But cell phones work really well. So people were able to report in via cell phone and know what was going on via cell phone. So you could know if there was a riot, a police riot, or people being murdered down the street from you and get the fuck out of there. Yushahidi was, so they worked on it in Kenya, and then right after the earthquake in Haiti, they deployed instance of Yushahidi for Haiti. And they were able to map where people needed disaster relief, where people needed help and things like that, where people were missing their families. And it was really useful for that. Yushahidi also has some other uses, like mapping where ICE raids are happening, or mapping where you could use it for like cop watch, mapping where police violence happens. Suki, I don't know much about Suki. Can you talk about Suki?
Yeah, Suki was developed recently in England to help student protesters with the work that was happening over there with Fair Heights. The Suki team is using an Yushahidi and Swift River backend, and what they've done is they've developed an application for mobile devices that uses your information to give you a presentation of a map of the area you are, and as you turn around, look to see where police are rounding up people. So if I was using the application, I would look at my phone, and if I had to make a decision of what street am I going to head down, I would turn like this, and as I turned like this, the map would update where the police mass arrests are happening.
So, yeah, and the cool thing about Yushahidi and Suki is that you're able to use them on your phone and more effectively. It really helps. And the other thing that's come out since then is March Hare's first project, which is the operator distribution. And that's what I'm going to talk about next, I think. Yes. Good. Just a second. So the operator distribution system. So operator is a tool designed to distribute digital tools to a group working as a team of operators during an action and working as a team in separate geographic locations, more importantly. So one of the problems with having a team of operators is that it's really time consuming to get everybody's computers set up, getting all the software set up on everybody's computers, getting everybody's accounts set up, sharing keys, and doing everything needed to set that infrastructure up. And people with differing skill levels as well. Not everybody is able to set up their own computer, so that limits the number of operators that you're able to have. The operator distribution is designed to solve this problem. So the way the operator distribution works is that each operator gets a suite of tools they need that works automatically on their computers. We do this by running a Linux live image off of a USB key. So the idea is you distribute operator USB keys to all of your friends, and then they can plug in and you have your operator network set up right there. with minimal configuration and minimal need for technical knowledge. The solution is resistant to external and internal threats. Internal threats, for example, well, actually, I think those are on the next slide. Yeah. All right, but, so, okay, great. In a distributed environment, there's a number of ways that network communication can be compromised. This could be infiltration from police agencies at the ISP level or at other network levels. Could be discovering and arresting individuals. Could be placing of informants within your network. There's a number of ways. There's technological and social that your network can be compromised. So if your operators are distributed, you have this hostile internet cloud in the middle where anybody could attack you and anything could happen. Next one. Attack you digitally, or physically, I guess, but this doesn't prevent police raids. So the idea of operator is you set up a private network. So this is a network that is not a part of the rest of the internet in general. Your communications are traveling encrypted from you to the person you're talking to and straight through. I don't know, do you have anything you want to add?
No, okay. No, doing great.
Thanks. So police, law enforcement, third parties aren't able to as easily intercept, tap these communications. Go ahead and do the next one. So when an operator is arrested or discovered, they can be removed from the network. So if somebody gets compromised, they get raided, or you find out they're a snitch, or they just, who knows, right? They can be removed from the network, and then your network is down an operator, but it's still secure. The first release of operator demonstrates a secure, so the first release, we have a secure voice call network. So you're able to, I don't think so. No, same one. So the first release of operator demonstrates the ability to do secure voice over IP conference calling, which we're going to physically demonstrate outside in a little bit if anybody's interested. Are we?
Yes.
Are we doing that? Good. Sweet. This is a solution to the problem of if you're calling via cell phone, landline, Skype, or other means, it's really easy to intercept your calls, trace them, tap them. Cell phone providers give that shit up like it's nobody's business. And landlines are even easier, and VoIP is even easier. So it's a problem, but it's a problem that we plan to solve. Other possible uses of the system are distributing PGP keys pre-configured so that secure email can be had, distributing pre-configured secure chat servers like IRC or Silk. Any other possibilities? No? Whatever your mind can imagine. Pre-configured web browsers. So I'll be the basis of future deployments of Operator. Go to the next one. So the future, the main thing is the end of text messages. I think that we're going to see the elimination of text as the sole and primary means of wireless communication. This will probably be replaced by interactive maps with a little text, like what we see in Suki or in Yoshihide. There will be more of a push to define to find open source alternatives to Twitter and reduce our reliance on cell phone networks and Twitter and other corporate networks. Also, we need to move toward decentralization. When you have one comm center, it gets raided, your comms is over. We need to have multiple comm centers or just people all over the country that can individually run this without even having to actually be at the protest. Also, more modes of information. We need to be able to filter out just the information we need. We need to be able to see it in different ways. Not everybody can read text, but most people can look at a map, and we need to be able to make systems of communication that work for everybody, regardless of their level of reading or writing or being able to see things like that, whether they're on the ground, on the streets, with a smartphone or without a smartphone. And they need to be customized to meet everybody's needs. People need to be able to customize themselves to meet their needs. And they need to be multi-use. There's been plenty of natural disasters lately in which software like this has been useful. We need to be able to use this for protests, disasters, and maybe just movement building, like tracking police violence and things like that. Good. Right. So what's important in the March Hare Collective is security. While we're developing the operator distribution, the main things we have in mind are security of the people using it, security of people's login data, so that people using it, if the system is compromised, the people who use it, the police won't have a list of the people who use the system. Security of the users, making sure that we don't leak user information, making sure that we don't leak information that needs to be sensitive, information that needs to not fall into the hands of law enforcement or other people, non-law enforcement. Operators need to be secure. Obviously, we can't go around having all of our operators get arrested at protests in police raids. We need to be safe so that we can keep the comms going. And it needs to be resistant to technological attacks. There are plenty of advanced, no system is ever hack-proof, but we need to be hack-resistant at least. We need a system that's smarter than the police, essentially. Possibly court uses. If we can log information that's relevant for protesters to use to their defense in court, then that's a good thing. So these are what we're thinking about in terms of security. And that's it, basically. The March Hare Collective we can use more hands, we can use more help. We need programmers and people to test the systems, people that have ideas about if you have cool ideas about what a communication system should do, we want to hear it. We need, basically just everybody, and equipment and money, definitely. If you want to be our rich donor, that'd be great. That's what we need. I think that's it, yeah? Yeah, oh, right. And you can contact us at march-hare.org. And what's our email info at?
Info. Yeah. March-hare.org.
Yeah. You can email us there too. And that's it.
Thank you.
How much time do we have?
You have roughly about 10 to 2 minutes.
Okay. We can take some questions. We can also demo the system outside for making secure VoIP calls. Yeah.
I didn't know what Swift River was, and I thought maybe you could explain it so we could.
Dennis, can you explain Swift River?
Swift River is a tool that's a part of the Ushahidi platform. Its goal is to be able to take in large amounts of information from multiple sources and to be able to use some simple artificial intelligence to determine what you're interested in. Did that answer your question?
Yes.
You were talking about the operator distribution system and the flash drives, and I guess it self-installs, but what's required from the end, the centralized end, who's distributing all of these? Is that a lot of work, or is it, you know, do you have like a WYSIWYG interface?
Sure, so maybe if I answer this wrong, jump in, Dennis, but the operator distribution system, so it's a Linux live image. So the first person, the main operator, right, me, or you're the first person, right, and you want to distribute this to your friends. So you take your USB key with operator on it, you plug it into your computer, and you turn it on. And it boots up into a Linux environment. Linux is an alternative operating system. It's alternative to Windows. It's free and open source software. So it boots up into Linux without ever touching your hard drive or installing anything on your computer. You're then able to use that first instance of operator to build as many other instances of operator as you need to distribute, to then distribute to your friends. And you can distribute them over the internet, yes?
By mail or over the internet.
Yeah, so or by mail, or physically, not by mail, whatever. But yeah, and it operator makes it easy to build those, it automates the building of those extra distributions to give to the other people in your affinity group or collective. And then they can just plug in their distributions and boot right up, and the software's all there, and they're good to go.
Can they also do multiple iterations for other operators themselves, or it has to come from the top down?
Not in this release. In future releases, we hope to provide that feature. Did people understand his question? Did anybody not understand his question?
Great. Anything else?
Is it a single one-click setup for creating other operators, or is it a little more involved than that once you, you load in the distribution and you're in the control panel? Does it take a lot of effort to create other friends and family to be operators?
We've designed it under the assumption that the person who sets it up, the first user, will have the functionality of understanding how to turn on a computer, use simple web applications like Facebook, and be able to configure DSL. So that we've tried to make it as simple that somebody
can you break down that acronym there?
Excuse me?
Can you break down the acronym? DSL?
DSL?
Configure DSL?
Configure DSL?
Yeah.
DSL is where you get internet.
Right, so you can configure internet. Okay.
So you configure the internet.
I was overthinking it.
Is Facebook required?
No, Facebook is not required, but I'm using that as an example because it may seem simple to people who use computers a lot that something like using a web page is a simple thing to do, but not everybody needs to do that. But we need to start at some place and say, like, basic understanding of what is a web browser, how to use a web page, what is a hyperlink, how to click on a link, how to fill out a form. So I use Facebook because it seems like everybody knows about it. It's in the news.
How large is the program base for a flash drive?
Right now it's 1.5 gigs. Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be cut down, though. There's a bunch of crap on it that just needs to be gotten rid of.
Yeah, so we're planning to make it, yeah, smaller.
Is it available?
We're having the alpha release on Friday. You'll be able to find it, a download button on the website, march-air.org.
Thank you.
And with three simple instructions of getting the release onto a USB drive.
If you needed to change your key to eliminate someone from your circle, is it easy to do that? Just read the
yeah.
The encryption key, or how does that work?
No, it is not easy to do that at that point. I would love to talk to you about any ideas you might have about that afterwards.
Anything else? Yeah.
I consider myself somewhat technologically savvy, but I mean, on the level you guys are talking about, I'm a little mystified as to like an end user, or even if I was going to become an operator. You're saying like I would download this program onto a flash drive, and then my circle of friends or the affinity group or whatever, I loaded on all their smartphones and can go ahead and do an action with secure communications.
So you would download it. You would download the program onto a flash drive, and then boot up your computer with that flash drive, which then boots into the operator environment. You can then easily build other operator images to either put on flash drives and give to your friends, or email to your friends so they can put them on flash drives. Then they all boot up their computers with the flash drive, the operator flash drive plugged in, and that boots them up into the operator system too, pre-configured so that you all have the same system and you can all talk to each other.
So that's one component. People with smartphones.
No. That's the whole component.
You say computer, you mean smartphones too?
No, I mean computer. So smartphones are a component in that they can make phone calls to the system possible. No, actually,
Can I step in? Do you mind?
Yeah, no, please.
We described two separate situations. We described the one of a mass mobilization scenario where operators are acting as people who are aggregating and distributing information. And the end users, the subscribers of that information, have smartphones. And they're receiving information that they're specifically interested in.
From the operators.
From the communications team, who may be using this software that we're developing. Another use case is one where an affinity group just needs to communicate securely with each other, and they aren't fit in a physical they aren't close to each other. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. But I guess to follow up on that, it's like the end users are still getting it through Twitter at this point?
No, we want to move away from Twitter because we don't trust Twitter. Twitter is shown not to be reliable in the situations that we need. So we're going to be using protocols that will be available on smartphones. So and yes, I know that smartphones are not accessibly priced to everyone right now, but we're seeing more and more that they're becoming cheaper, and then we think in the upcoming years that they will become more accessible. They're being included on pay-as-you-go plans right now, and so it is becoming more accessible. And in England, in fact, the majority of the student protesters had smartphones already, so we're seeing it currently right now. And as we go forward in time, it'll only get cheaper and more accessible.
So that would be some app that is also downloadable from the website?
Yes.
The user.
Yes.
Okay. How much time do we have?
Yeah, about 6 minutes.
Okay, great. Any other questions?
Did everybody understand that question?
Sorry, it was kind of...
Did anybody not understand that question? Right now, no. In future releases, yes. In the next beta release that will be done before the end of the summer, we'll have the functionality that if you get arrested and your USB key gets taken, that authorities won't be able to join the network. And that if you're currently working on your computer and you're connected to the network and you get raided, and the police snatch you before you're able to pull the plug on your computer and turn it off, we'll be able to sever the connection. But in the current alpha release that we have on Friday, that functionality is not available.
How would you even know if someone stuff that taken?
There's some times that you can know. You know, if you hear a ram hitting down your door, sometimes you have enough time.
No, I mean, like, someone... No, I mean, if someone's like gets raided, you don't know that like that person's been raided, that the USB key is in the possession of the police right now.
Is someone spying on you?
Oh, but like if they've effectively gotten the key and compromised the system?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or if they take your friend in jail and they beat them up and they give their password and there's no way to find out. I guess if you found out that your friend got arrested, you would disable their key first of all. And not wait for them to get beat up and give off the password.
Right.
But right now, the vulnerability of, because we don't have this feature until the end of the summer, if your gear gets taken and the police join the network and you don't have any security culture method way of dealing with this, then that's access gained to the system. Yes, that's a vulnerability.
let me give the disclaimer that right now operator distribution should not be used in actions where security is paramount, because it's not a secure ready system just yet. We definitely want people to be using it and testing it in real actions. But if you're doing a direct action where maybe everybody could, if caught and convicted, be serving felonies of something on the order of decades, don't use operator yet. That's the disclaimer here.
And don't rely solely on tools that are produced by failable people. You know, programmers are just people, and we write tools that have bugs in them, and this is a reality. And you can't just take digital solutions and say that your security concerns are all going to be addressed. When organizing with each other, we need to set up security culture and practices that make sense for the work that we're doing. With these tools, we can lower the risk of entry into different actions and hopefully be more effective and be able to work on campaigns that have better and more successful outcomes.
Excuse me, I'm the time person. I'm
cool. Do you guys teach about security culture, or like is that part of what you're trying to spread awareness of and try to get people to actually care about security culture? Information security culture?
It is, yeah.
That's one of the things that hackblog.org does. We do presentations in the areas that we live in.